This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 621, brought to you by Harry's. Get your free trial set. Go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. That's harrys.com/ifanboy. And iFanboy listeners like you.
Help, I have done it again. I have been here many times before. Hurt myself again today.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 621. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, all of you. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the Pick of the Week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about some other books, the patron pick. Sometimes that's the same thing. And maybe if you have time, we'll listen to and read some listener mail. We have to listen. You have to listen to it before we read it. Listen, I'm not saying I've got a log, but...
It's very early.
Do you think... Do you ever watch, you probably don't as much as I do, but you ever watch National Lampoon's and just go, wow, I really, really, really relate to Chevy Chase now, which is not what was
supposed
to
happen. Well, who did you relate to before?
The kids, because they came out when we were kids.
I think I always related to Chevy Chase on some level.
Okay. Well, that's his power. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There will be spoilers, so exercise your own caution on that. You are on your own. Connor, you had the pick this week.
I did. Normally, regular listeners of the show know that we talk about the books we want to talk about. And then at the end of the segment of the comics talk, we do the patron pick, in which the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy vote a book onto the rundown. And this week, as has happened once and perhaps twice before, the patron pick was the same as the pick of the week, Invincible number 144. So thank you, patrons, for voting in another oversized book as the pick of the week. And actually... I do have to thank them because if not for their vote, this wouldn't have been the pick because I read Invincible in trade. So this is the first time I've ever read them in issues.
Ever? Never. Yeah, I guess that's right because we started on trades. I moved to issues. Huh.
But I mean, it doesn't – I read them all at once. So it was like reading a trade. However,
right.
I mean, I read six issues of Invincible leading up to this one, and then this was oversized. So thank you again. 2 weeks in a row, an Invincible patron pick that was oversized. But I had more of a sense of when the issues ended here, as obviously because the issue would end, as opposed to reading it in collections, which I think one of Kirkman's skills is to make it not necessarily clear where the issues end. Anyway,
that's true.
Invincible 144, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Ryan Ottley, and original artist Corey Walker, and this is the final issue of the book that we have often talked about early on in the run of the show, not so much later because I'm in trades and Josh stopped reading.
Only a few issues ago. I had actually only missed three issues.
I think it's one of the most unheralded superhero books of the last 10 years.
Well, yeah, there's a little something going on in Kirkman's other corner, which tends to overshadow it.
This is a book we've talked about the entire run since the beginning. We were early in on Invincible, and it was a book that in the beginning of the show we would often say is one of the books you had to read that no one was reading. It's a rarity. It's a book in which You have a superhero adventure in which characters grow and learn and change throughout the course of 144 issues. How many? This has started, what, 10 years ago or so?
More than that, I think.
Where these characters are now, obviously, is way different than where they are in the beginning. Life happens to them. They react to that. They grow older. Their needs and wants change, as humans do. And it also includes a shared universe. There was a bunch of other books like Brit and Global Guardians that tied into it. This was Kirkman creating the book that fans often say they want, which is a big superhero universe with consequences and stakes and characters who grow and change and learn. And this is the culmination of all of that. And it was really nice to have that, even though I'm sad it's over because I really enjoy reading it every time the trade comes out, to see where this all ended up. And it all ended up, I don't want to say in a nice bow, but it came back around again in the way that life is often cyclical. I really liked it, obviously.
To follow up, it debuted, number one was January of 2003, so that's 15 years.
Okay, so we were doing the website, but not the show yet.
Yeah, that's right. But we hadn't started reading this in issues. I didn't start there. Not long after, I was a big fan of some other. I really liked Kirkman's Battle Pope.
Yes.
And then he was doing, I think, a little Marvel stuff by that point. But I came onto this a little bit later. I've been on issues for most of it.
Yeah, you have.
I think the thing that it strikes me is that, you know, characters are allowed to grow and change and things like that. So in that way, you know, we used to describe it as, I remember it was sort of a peer of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
In that it was an ongoing story about a young, you know, kid who became a superhero. And it was kind of a fun book at the time. Because if you remember, we were coming out of this was when comics were trying to be dark, basically. Yeah. And this wasn't like that. But it was visually not dark. It's always been sort of colorful and not afraid to look like a
even
superhero.
Even when it's is dark and are super yes. bloody, it still comes off like a cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
In a really good way.
And this is at a time when, you know, early 2000s to mid 2000s, really comics were not going for that. When was New Frontier? Let's see.
Around that time.
Yeah, around this time. And that was pretty out of place at the time. And I remember like when comics were really trying to be, they were trying to be mature. It wasn't like 1986 trying to be dark, but it was definitely going in that way. And they were trying to paint them and make them look realistic. And
well, Marvel Knights had been really successful.
Yeah.
New Frontier was the year after. It was 2004. So it was the same time.
So if you think this was actually a sort of forward thinking, I guess, in its design. And it really stood out for that for me. And then also, you know, you had this character who was sort of interesting and fun and not Dick Grayson like, let's say, for example.
Well, I think the fact that his name is Grayson is not a mistake.
No, I don't think so either. But over time, it did get heavier, as our lives all do. If you want to think about how young Kirkman probably was when he started this.
Let's not.
Exactly. He would have been early 20s at most, I think, at this point, because he's younger than us. Anyway, but over time, like, it got heavier. And sort of in parts of it, there's some really big moral questions that were going on. It really managed to toe a line of tone, I think, that a lot of comics would have had a hard time with. And what is even more interesting to me is that, I mean, I don't know how much experience somebody can actually have piloting a long-form comic book series, because you only get to do it so many times. But it was handled really well. And it's funny, because there is a little part of me, which is ridiculous now to say, that thinks of Kirkman as a new guy. I'm like, oh, he's doing pretty good at this. And then I go, yeah, no shit.
I mean, this is going to sound crazy considering the empire he's built on Walking Dead, but I think this is his masterpiece.
Certainly, you know, as a guy who came from loving superhero comics, you know, to the thing that he did, this seems more of the type of the kinds of things that he liked.
Well, I just mean, like, I enjoy Walking Dead and I still read it, mm-hmm. but, you know, this is a tighter story. This tracks much better. Walking Dead, not unjustly, gets criticized for falling into a pattern. You know, they find there's a threat, they overcome the threat after you think they can't, and then they move on to find a new threat. And that's fine, and that's the story they're telling, but I think this is a more interesting and tighter story that goes places, but then always resolves them in a satisfying way, even if you're not satisfied with the way they resolve it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Taken as a whole, this 144 issues is, to me, Kirkman's masterpiece, as much as I enjoy Walking Dead.
It's interesting how much this guy, Kirkman, has evolved into somebody who really is dealing with, like, large-scale moral mm-hmm. choices. And that's what a lot of – this is actually larger scale moral choices than it is over in Walking Dead, because at least that's only just sort of a small number of people.
Universe spanning.
Yeah. But this is really big, and I don't know what it would feel like to read again from the beginning, but it feels like all the stuff was kind of there, like he knew what everything was. So when he started moving the pieces around, he didn't double back on himself at all.
Well, let's talk about the issue itself, obviously, because it wasn't pick of the week because of the series. This was a really fine final issue. I don't want to call it the 6 feet under issue because it's not about
that same. Yeah.
It's not about how everyone dies, but it kind of felt that way. We kept moving forward in time. We kept jumping further and further ahead to see how these characters had moved on. And so it felt that way to me, even if it wasn't about their deaths. So the big final storyline, which has taken place over the last year of Invincible, has been the big final battle, the end of all things with the Viltrumites. They finally defeat them. Mark's father is killed in the battle. Remember, spoiler warning. And Mark is ascended to the emperorship of the Viltrumites, as much as he didn't want to. And if this is, you know, I think that's been the pull of the series, is that Mark's destiny has been calling him the whole time, and even when he didn't want it to. Mm-hmm. And it had to go that way. He had to take the mantle of his father. And then the big thing for this issue is that his son, by way of the rape, right?
Yes.
So he was raped by a Viltrumite woman.
Anissa.
Many, many issues ago. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know that she had a son. And so this issue is all about the son, really, who grows up to become his father in some ways. And then the other part of the family tree, which is his daughter with Eve, who is also a superhero or superpowered person who grows up in a different way. And it sort of follows the generational tree of Mark, even though, you know, as a Viltrumite, Mark's pretty much not immortal, but he ages very slowly. And apparently Adam Eve is immortal.
Yeah, that was an interesting little trick, because basically this is one point where they call back the daughter, and she's on her deathbed. She's super old. And they think, oh, right, she's not a Viltrumite. She's not the same as that. And then she sort of just regenerates herself. And there's the last panel on that page where she just goes, rad. Like, and I was like, well, that's the fun part of the book.
Yeah.
There's all this heavy stuff going on, but that's the same character from issue one, drawn by Corey Walker from issue one. You know, and I really like that as sort of a callback on tone.
Yeah. For sure. And then it keeps going where, you know, now his son is basically the age he was when he was in his prime, and they have a conflict, but it doesn't end the way that they're it just shows how different Mark is than his father, in that these same events keep happening, but they don't go the same. They don't end up going the same direction. Mm-hmm. I think his daughter's a really interesting and fun character.
Yeah.
And I think the conflict, not the conflict, but the difference between her and his son is really interesting. And I liked that we got a whole backstory of the son in essentially like two pages, where he shows up as an adult, very angry and jealous because he doesn't consider himself the, you know, real son, or maybe his father's ashamed of him. And they get all that worked out in two pages in a way that felt real and realistic and didn't feel like I was shortchanged. I feel like I got that whole years long conflict distilled to two pages.
And also, though, I mean, that's a pretty big matzo ball to be hanging out there.
Right.
If they ever want to pick this up again, you've got the two kids, you know.
Oh, for sure.
What's his name? Marky, I guess. You know.
He has to have a super team called the Funky Bunch, right?
Come on.
So, it ends really nicely. You know, Mark gets the nice moment. I mean, he's still the emperor of the Viltrumites. He's still dealing with a lot of stuff, but he, you know, he's got his wife and his daughter, and everyone's happy, and I really liked this issue a lot. I mean, it also wasn't, you know, there was sadness. He and Alan Alien are basically... Alan the Alien are broken, their friendship, and that was sad. And they go to war. I really like this issue. The art from both guys, you know, Corey Walker was the original artist. He wasn't on for very long. Ryan Otley took over and really made the book his own. I always liked them both for different reasons, and it was nice to see them both get half the book.
I've found myself thinking for a long time, what is Ryan Otley going to do after this? And also, what the hell is Corey Walker doing? You know, they're both similar, but not the same. You can instantly tell the difference. I think I find it really sweet that, you know, they both got an equal number of pages here. Like, Corey Walker has always gotten his due on this book, I think. It's not, you know.
Well, he always would come back for, like, an issue.
Yeah, or an arc. He did a couple arcs over the past.
But I mean, really was Otley really?
Yes.
When the book took off and got super crazy was when Otley was doing it. He really just defined the look of those giant battle scenes.
And Otley, you know, he's one of the best superhero artists out there.
Yes.
I mean, we haven't seen him do a lot of different stuff, but I mean, he's got his own style, but it's sort of instantly recognizable. It's, you know, very exciting. You know, he's got good storytelling. He's got good character design. He's got all that stuff. He can do action. He can do comedy. He can kind of do anything right now. But he's been living in this sort of rarefied space where his thing was just put the issues out every month. Not unlike Charlie Adlar, but he gets more breaks because they'll have fill-in issues every once in a while.
Right.
But it'll be really, really fascinating to see what he does next.
For sure. And it's an end of an era, you know. A lot of these books that have been seminal iFanboy books are, you know, they're going away, and it's sad. This is one of the books that was always around, and it's not. Invincible 144. Robert Kirkman, Ryan Otley, Corey Walker, Mark Morales, Nathan Fairbairn, Russ Wooten. That's the entire creative team. This is an issue to be proud of, and it's a run to be proud of for sure.
Yeah, and it was a strong ending, which I had no doubt about, really, because they've always known what this is. They did what it was supposed to.
Yeah, this is Kirkman getting to do superhero books the way I guess he wishes they were done.
Well,
super fun. If you're a superhero person who wants this kind of story, now you have 144 issues to check out, and it's, you know, if you've never read it before, it's awesome.
I agree.
25 collections, so if you want to read it that way. Yeah.
Or a bunch of large books.
Yes.
I don't know how many of those are still in print, but they exist.
So until I got to Invincible, I thought maybe the pick of the week might be Kill or Be Killed, number 16, Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips, Elizabeth Breitweiser. Are you still reading this?
Yeah, yes, but you're on your own this week.
Okay, you didn't read this
one. It was the last one that I was like, I got to get to that, and then I realized I didn't get to it. But I'm looking at it.
What I like about this issue is we don't know what the fuck is going on. I was just making fun of this last night. The main character, I said, we don't know anybody's names. The main character is in the insane asylum because he's either hallucinating the demon or...
Or he's not.
Meanwhile, someone's out there in the world killing people as him. There's a vigilante copycat who, in this issue, kills a cop, which is a big problem.
All I'm hearing is that he has plausible deniability for everything that is
happening. Sure, but the cliffhanger at the end, and I'm going to spoil it for you, is...
That's fine.
His old roommate either is the one out there killing people, Dylan's the old roommate, or the reveal is that Mark is the invincible, whoever the hell his roommate. No, Dylan's the main dude. We don't know anyone's names. Dylan's the main dude. The roommate calls Bellevue to check on Dylan, and they said he was released after 72 hours. So the question is he even actually in a insane asylum? That's the big cliffhanger.
So my thing with this book is I tend to enjoy reading it, but I don't look forward to it. And I put it off. Like when I get it, I'm like, I don't need to read that way. This is what happened this week with it.
Uh-huh.
I kind of feel like I want it to be over. And I don't mean that in the I don't mean I don't like it or it's not good, but I feel like we're going in circles for a really long time and I keep losing interest in it until I get back on. I don't look forward to it. And the mystery keeps getting spun out longer and longer, which is what something I term the lost effect.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's well done, I kind of don't care enough to keep going like that. And I'm going to read it.
But you do.
Exactly. I'm on a line, basically. Like, if you were to take this book away from me right now, I would probably be fine. But when I read it, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. Like, because it is pretty good. It's done pretty well, you know, and I have to respect that. But I don't know. It's also, it's the other thing is I find it really grim and hopeless and everybody's sad in it. And, you know, lots of people getting shot.
You can't deal with that right now.
I kind of don't want to, no.
That's fine.
But it's really good.
I really like it. I like that I'm never quite sure what exactly is going on with this particular book. I don't necessarily always like that as a storytelling device, but unless I'm completely reading it wrong, which I could be, I'm allowing for that fact, it seems to be the cliffhangers implying that who knows what the fuck's actually happening here.
I trust that Ed Brubaker actually does.
I hope he does.
Mm-hmm.
But we may not. But I really liked it. So I don't know what to make of Captain America. Captain America 698 came out this week.
Yeah.
Based on the first issue, obviously it was a pick of the week and we loved it so much. And there's been issues since then that we've really liked on Steve's road trip across America. I don't know what they're doing. Here he gets zapped to the future.
Not far.
He was zapped to the future at the end of the last issue. and he sees a world in which everything's gone to hell. Tyranny and oppression have won. The rich elites have sort of walled themselves off, and everyone else is living in a hellscape. And there's like radiation created half animal creatures, and it's all real bad. And the big reveal is that it's not like 100 years in the future, or even 200 years. It's like 10
7.
Or 7 years.
So you're not sure if you like that?
On its own, sure. I don't know what this book is about.
It's about Captain America.
Obviously.
Well, I'm saying, like, so this is, it's called Out of Time. And Captain America's whole thing is he's a man out of time. But we tend to get away from that from time to time. And so I think this is a way, I don't know, I like what they're doing. I like that it's really abrupt and pretty bombastic, but, you know, we know who he is and we know the stakes sort of all the time. We very quickly get a rundown of this sort of scary, not too future world that, you know, that I feel like Brian Wood could have consulted on.
Right. Sure.
I don't know. I thought it was fun. To me, it feels like a Captain America book. Like, I feel like this is something that Jack Kirby would have done. Mm-hmm. This isn't so different than what Rick Remender did.
I think that's what was strange to me, because I feel like, as much as we enjoyed that, I feel like that was very poorly received generally.
Yeah.
And it seems odd to go back to putting him in an alternate world. I didn't dislike the issue.
I doubt it'll last that long, though. This will be a couple few issues.
Sure. I mean, it's not going to last past 700, so it's not going to go more than that. But
I mean, the thing is this, though. Is this the best looking book?
For sure.
It's the best looking book, right?
Yeah.
From Matt Wilson's colors to, I mean, I know we talk about Somni a lot, but he is tearing it up here.
Yes.
The world that was created for however, with this short little world, you know, there's all this rubble, there's tanks, there's, you know, new villains and people to be designed. Say what you will, but God damn it, Captain America looks cool in a trench coat.
No, for sure. And I want to reiterate, I didn't dislike the issue. I just was a little bewildered by the choice, the storytelling choice.
The shot, there's a one panel shot of the throne room.
Yes.
Where the light's coming from above, and there's this sort of twisted staircase and these huge, you know, guards and the villain who is in a shadow. And that's just, it's real good. It feels like Captain America to me. That's, you know, it doesn't matter. I think it doesn't matter what you put behind him, he becomes Captain America. I think maybe what you're talking about, and I can see this, is that we were sort of looking for this road trip around America and it didn't last very long. But maybe it will. Maybe this is sort of exploring that, but in a different light, and then he'll be in Nebraska when we come back.
I like that no matter what age or year, the super rich will wear top hats, spats, cravats.
I mean, that's just a signifier. It's just...
I mean, come on. If I'm a super rich asshole, I'm also going to dress like the Penguin.
There is, on one of the pages where they show them, it looks like he's from the side and he has like a pointy...
Mm-hmm.
No, is that like a logo from something?
It looks like the New Yorker.
Yes, it does. That's what I was looking for. Yeah.
I like the idea that the super rich had Frozen Cap as like a totem.
That's what they do, like hanging Han Solo on the wall.
Oh. I mean, it was fun. I just was like, what is this book doing?
I did have a little bit of, did I miss an issue? But I was like, no, part one. And I like when they do that. As long as I'm not lost going into it, I'm fine with that.
Speaking of lost.
Oh, no.
I'm a little lost on slots. I really like slots. But I lose track a little bit of all the different relationships. Like, it opens up with a guy talking about his history with Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, who is this guy again? There's so many ex-wives and girlfriends, and they swapped, and Stanley slept with all of them, and whose daughter is the stripper? And like, I think I need to read this all in a go. I really like this a lot. This was great. There was a really fun Darwin Cook nod in here. But like, I think I need to read it all at once just to keep track of all the different myriad ways these people are related to each other.
It's funny because I wasn't lost on this one. I was like, okay, I know who these people are now. And I felt that I enjoyed it more because of that, which is kind of interesting. Like, so Stanley and this other dude were friends and they had wives, and then Stanley slept with the one wife and then they broke up, and then Stanley left, so this other dude took the other wife and then they had the kid. It doesn't matter. I think I don't know how to explain it, but I thought I understood as we were going, but I get the basis of the relationship. I like that we don't know Like, basically, Stanley comes in and he makes this guy who hates him, although he says he can't hate him, he doesn't trust him or whatever. He makes him a deal. He's going to throw this fight. And he's just super confident about everything all over the place, and I don't know where he's going to go. And this isn't like we were just talking about in the Brubaker book, where I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I know something's going to happen, but I'm not sure what it's going to be because I don't know where this guy's coming from, and he's a wild card in Vegas, obviously.
Who is – what is his name? What is the guy's name? I don't know his name.
This is a really fun recurring theme that – listeners might not love.
The first page, okay. Stanley's friend who he betrayed. Who is he talking to?
He's talking to the daughter who is okay. The dancer.
I see.
And he's trying to steal her away from her mother's show.
And that's his actual daughter.
I don't think. I don't think so. Maybe? But I don't think so. But I know that he used to be with her mother.
Okay. His stepdaughter.
But what's confusing is that when you're trying to get all this straight, Stanley's actual son is named Lucy. So
Dan Pinochian's not helping. Is what
you
we're...
think you're getting somewhere like, who the fuck is Lucy? Oh, it's that tough boxer dude. That is not helpful.
The main thing is this book is gorgeous. And I think it's going to read really well together. I think there's one more. I assume one more issue.
Yes, one more. Six is the final.
There's some great Dan Pinochian working here. There's a big fight in the end where everybody wants to beat up on Stanley, but Lucy shows up and kicks their asses. I thought this was great art-wise.
They need to not name that guy Lucy.
I really appreciate Stanley's commitment to free tacos.
I was about to bring up that we went back to the taco truck this time, and again, it's not just a background. Like, we have to actively discuss tacos. He really likes those tacos. And I don't think it's just because they're free, although I think that helps.
And the tough part is I read that and I go, I also want tacos.
I'm going to make tacos tonight.
But they're not going to be free.
Well, no, but they're not so expensive that I can't have another one.
That's true. I just want to go to a taco truck is what I'm saying after reading this.
I'll have carnitas for days. It's going to be all good.
Doctor Strange 385.
Yeah, this wraps up the Sorcerer Supreme as Loki story. I think this was a patron pick to start the arc.
Yes, it was.
Donny Cates' first arc with the fantastic Gabriel Hernandez-Walta and Jordi Belair on art and color. This whole arc was just a delight.
Yes, it was. This was terrific.
It had no right to be that because the Sentry and the Void were the centerpiece of it.
Yeah.
And I think we're so hungry for good comics that we're like, fine, show us what you got. And it totally worked out. Also, there was a panel in here where the Sentry gets mad at Doctor Strange and he kind of pouts at him. He's just, leave me alone. And then the next panel is a boom and then he's flown away. I really liked that just as a storytelling element.
This was like a reset issue. Mm-hmm. So at the end of this, it's all been reset. The Sentry's gone. Loki's no longer the Sorcerer Supreme. Even what's her name's gone?
Zelda.
So it's back to sort of resetting the status quo.
He has a ghost dog now.
He does have a ghost dog.
And presumably he will then find the way of the samurai. That's a early 2000s indie movie joke for those of you out there paying attention.
There was a couple of issues like that this week where this was a reset. But I did like this a lot. This was a contender for pick of the week.
Oh, great.
I hope that Walta stays on the book. I mean, I don't have any reason to think he won't, but you never know these days.
Yeah. I really liked with Loki. A, the characterization of Loki was pretty spot on. And you kind of think you're getting a handle on it. And then there's a little twist. And he's like, all right. I was lying. I mean, of course he was lying, you know, and then, you know, you think you've got it. It's like, oh, I was lying there too. And it happened like three times. And I was like, that's what Loki's supposed to be like. And I enjoyed that because I don't, it's really easy. They're doing it with Dr. Doom where at least in some books where, you know, he's turning over a new leaf and we're supposed to believe like he totally is. And I'm fine with that. Like, I don't ever want Loki. It's like the Joker. Like, I don't ever want.
Well, the thing is, right? That's Marvel's thing, is to make the bad guys good guys. So you can see why the heroes fall for it, because we keep falling for it.
Sure.
Like, well, obviously he's lying. Obviously he's, damn it, he's lying. So Loki works really well in that instance, and he can play against Marvel type.
And if you make sure to keep that one guy like that, but always just keep fooling us, I'm fine with it. It's a good move.
And also, amongst the reset is that most of the magic is back. Not all of it, but Loki has restored much of the magic that was taken away in the Jason Aaron arc.
Good.
Yes, good.
Jason Aaron's story was great, and I really liked it, but this is like when Damien died, and you're like, all right, just get on with it now. Like, reset it. I don't care. I don't need to explain how it came back. It doesn't invalidate what happened before. They told that story. Let's not keep telling the leftovers of that story forever.
Right.
So go with that.
This was a solid. We have more books to talk about, but this was this is a solid week of comics.
Going well so far. You know what else is going well?
What's that?
My face.
Hmm.
My face is, out of everything else, my face is going great. I credit that largely to Harry's.
Well, you've been shaving again.
I have.
You told me you shaved and your wife was like, don't like it.
Yeah. Well, I have to shave around the areas.
I see.
I keep the beard, which is, I try my best to make it manly, but, you know, around, like basically the stuff underneath, the stuff around that doesn't grow in fully, it needs to be excised regularly. And so that is what I use it for. I would say this is not scientific, but I think my incidence of razor bumps and things like that are way down.
For sure.
Partially.
Yes.
Because, the Harry's stuff is actually affordable enough that I don't try to use it forever. which is a real thing, because I would hate going to have to. I'm like, oh, I need new ones. Just forget it. But I'm a big fan, so that's why we're talking to you about it. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is exactly what I just said, without looking at that as the next part that I was supposed to say. Which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy were two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades, so they started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's stripped out the unnecessary features like vibrating handles, which we've talked about, or heated handles, or heated blades, or any...
Heated handles?
I don't want current going through the thing with the no. Very sharp thing.
No.
Okay. They started Harry's to fix shaving, and they're cutting out a lot of the costs that were unnecessary, that were making the razor blades that we were buying so expensive, and delivering a really good product to customers. A good shave comes down to good blades, because Harry's owns the factory, which is in Germany. They're able to deliver amazing quality blades for just $2 a blade, compared to $4 or more that you will pay at a drugstore. Or I believe the market price in San Francisco is $78. Like, I might want to check, because I had to buy some once there. I was like, oh my God. And then you got to pay 15 cents for a bag. All the products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's is so confident that you're going to love their blades, they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/ifanboy and you just pay for shipping. Again, that's harrys.com/ifanboy. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today, which is a $13 value when you sign up. Just cover shipping, like we said. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, which does not buzz, vibrate, heat up, light up. It does the job it is supposed to. 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel in there, which I like. I actually need some more of that. And, of course, the coveted travel blade cover. So that your little dot bag does not become your personal hell. get your free trial over at harrys.com/ifanboy right now. harrys.com/ifanboy.
When you don't have the travel blade cover, it's almost like you've booby-trapped your own bag.
It's basically Nom.
I'm going to stick my fingers in here, and I may end up getting cutting them off. But I travel with really, really sharp blades, apparently. Miss Marvel 27. I wanted to check in because we haven't talked about this book in a while. Still going strong. Are you still reading it?
Off and on, but I'm not. I on a heavy week, I was like, eh.
This particular arc has been really fun. Miss Marvel is gone. She is not active, so all of her friends, many of the friends we've met over the course of the series, have taken up the mantle. They wear wearing versions of her costume to keep Jersey City safe in her absence, and it's not going all that well. So they had to call in Captain Marvel at the end here. But it's been really fun to have the supporting cast take center stage and try to do her job and realize how hard it is. But also not completely being bad at it. They do manage to solve a mystery. It's just that they can't defeat the villain. So they use the bat signal, basically, and call in Captain Marvel, the emergency... Not the bat signal, the Jimmy Olsen's signal watch, basically, that Captain Marvel had given to Ms. Marvel. Call her in. So it's going to be a team-up between Captain Marvel and the Scooby Gang next month. And they're fun. They're super fun. G. Willow Wilson has a great voice for all these characters. The art is often different. This issue is Nico Leon, but they're all in that style. It's sort of almost YA
mm-hmm.
style.
Yeah, there's a YA comic book style now, isn't there?
And it really works for this comic. It's still one of the most fun books I read every month.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I think when she sort of wasn't the focus, I lost a little bit of steam on it. Ms. Marvel herself, Kamala?
Yes, Kamala.
Yeah. But it hasn't been bad. I just didn't really know who anybody was anymore. So I was like, no, I can skip that. That'll be fine. But I come back in, and I find that works.
The Flash 40, which is part 2 of the Grodd story, in which Garrod has a degenerative disease and he's desperate to cure it with Speed Force. A couple of things. Here, one, I like the idea of a super telepath who's got a degenerative brain disease. So he really feels the pain of that, as everyone does. But someone who's telepathic, it's really hard for him. Two, the art was terrific. And three, this issue ended very similarly to Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps this week, in which the mantle is handed off. In this issue of Flash, Barry loses his powers. They are sucked out by Grodd. So he turns to Wally and says, "You're Flash now."
Huh.
And you didn't read this, did you?
I did. No, I did. And I thought that's significant. I don't choose to believe that we've got Barry permanently out
now.
No,
for sure not. For sure.
And I don't think they should, but yeah, it makes room for Wally, and you can shuffle things around for a little bit. I know about Grodd, but I actually haven't read a lot of stories with him.
Mm-hmm.
I like that he's such a grave threat, but also he's a giant monkey. Like, I like that sort of mixing of ridiculous and heavy. There's a bit where Barry basically was like, you can't handle Grodd. You need to go.
Well, if you think about it, you take away the telepathic super intellect powers. I mean, he's a gorilla.
Yep.
So that's in and of itself terrifying from a physical standpoint. So you add that, the gorilla, the super strong, physically intimidating presence, and now you add super intellect and telepathy. He's really a formidable villain.
Yeah, but he's also ridiculous.
Sure.
And I like those. I like the combination of those two things, and I like when it gets written that way.
And in the end of Green Lanterns, Hal and Kyle were trapped by Zod. Hal's able to get Kyle out with his ring for reasons we're not going to get into, but he ends up wearing Hal's ring, and he's got with a new costume. And, you know, when we first started doing this, there was the divide of fans. There was the Wally, Kyle, Connor Hawk fans, and there was the Oliver.
There are no Connor Hawk fans.
Barry and Hal Jordan fans. There were at the time. In this month, they sort of handed off the mantles back to the younger guys for a minute. So we'll see how that goes. Wally West is back.
Yeah, so I'm still reading The Wildstorm, Michael Kray. Number 5 came out. Basically, every 2 issues, they take another DC hero and make a serial killer version of him. This time, we're doing Aquaman, who lives in a castle in a weird town around New Zealand. Something like that. So they send Michael Kray down there to kill him, basically. You know, and the townspeople make offerings of their virgins to the sea. And then, you know, like the creepy, scary Aquaman guy shows up with all his sharks and they eat it and makes him happy. And then they let the fishermen have a catch or fish so that they have food.
How do you feel about this, considering that we didn't like it when they did it in the DC horror book? Made all the heroes like these awful villains.
It's
you're allowed to like this one.
I assume that it's a question of how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, in the DC, like some of that was almost a little more more twisted, but that's not it. But this is sort of a Warren Ellisian, I mean, obviously, like it's a spun off from Warren Ellis's little world that he's building, irreverence to it, you know, and you have a character to latch onto in the form of this Michael Kray. So there's a consistency there and he's got his story that's ongoing. You know, and he's trying to solve a problem and none of this really matters. It's just sort of an interesting tonal experiment, really. But there is a story, whereas the short stories just felt kind of nihilistic with nothing to grab onto. Maybe that's the difference. Or maybe it's just, you know, craft. Maybe it's just how it's being done. I don't really know. But because I don't know, like at first I said, this is stupid. And then I was like, this is stupid. And it's a fine line, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I find myself looking forward to this book. I've really been enjoying it.
Lazarus X plus 66 number 6. Not the best title.
That's true, but it doesn't bother me. I've enjoyed this.
I don't care.
You don't care?
No, I mean, I don't care about the title.
Okay.
I like this issue, although I feel like you could have not read most of the captions.
Yeah. That's probably true. And it's funny because I normally don't really like the poetic prose style being inserted in here. Certainly not at like midnight where I'm like, I keep reading. But it worked for me. And I think that when we got into sort of the main story of this, what, the dragon?
The Russian Lazarus, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the art style. I liked a different take on...
I mean, I thought the story was fun. I just felt like this special ops guy who's been sent to kill the dragon, it was very purpley, the prose. And there's a lot of it.
Yes.
Leading into his confrontation with the dragon. I thought once
the dragon started talking.
Once he got to the dragon, it was great.
Yep, that's kind of, and I think that's what I chose to latch onto. And so I kind of forgot about the hunter and the whatever. I really enjoyed isn't really the right word, but like the shelf of heads and the open spaces. You know, it's very like classic, you know, Russian bear bad guy versus, you know, whoever else.
Right.
But, you know, we grew up with that. So it certainly plays to a familiar spot, I think.
I think we're underselling the shelf. He's got two cabinets of heads.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I noticed before.
I like the lesser heads on the bottom, which don't need to have plaques.
Those are your your well heads, not your top shelf heads. You know. If you look, the top shelf is all reserved for the other Lazari. This is, you know.
And I liked it, like, when he's sitting there talking to him, there's a brief moment where you're like, well, maybe he's going to be, like, a reasonable person.
Nope.
Yeah, nope.
Your head's going on a shelf.
Would you like some tea? Oh, okay, everything's going to be fine. It's not.
Although he gets to keep his hat, so that's nice. If you read the back, and I'm sure you didn't, this book didn't exactly help them with their scheduling issues, which is why it existed originally. The next issue of Lazarus is not going to be out until April.
That's not so bad.
It's not so bad, but April, and then they're going to skip June. It's going to be basically the same as before. So, you know, it's indie comics. It is what it is, but...
Yeah, it's not so bad. I can take a break. This was a nice diversion into the world, and it could have been a lot worse. Sure. So I enjoyed it.
Could have been a lot worse. Josh Flanagan, I fanboy. Put that in the cover.
I liked it. I've made a point to talk about the book. You son of a bitch.
I twisted it on you.
Let's head over to Star Wars Corner very briefly.
Okay.
You can go have some tea.
That's fine. Now, no, I don't want tea.
No, that's a good point. Cigarette?
No.
Darth Vader, the Charles Soule version, which is different than the Kieran Gillen version, which then got spun off into Dr. Aphra. This really is Darth Vader going around killing people. It's kind of what it is.
How is that to read?
It's pleasantly enjoyable. Because it's not unlike the Punisher, really. Like, you think that there's going to be some other, like, maybe we'll find something about his character. Nope. And then there always has to be a shot of just Darth Vader face. And it has that, well, I guess you read into that whatever it is you want to, like in the movie. And I just, you know.
Well, because in the comics, you can't do the imperceptible head tilt, you know, that you read all these emotions into.
Yeah, but they get to it in their comic book way. And a lot of times there'll be like one shot that doesn't move. And then like the next will be the same, but there'll be a word balloon. So indicating that there's some sort of movement. But even though he's a bad guy, you know, there's something interesting about his ultimate confidence and competence that is sort of always happening through here. And these tricks within tricks that are going on. And I think that Soule has struck just the right tone in making sure not to take this too seriously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Giuseppe Camuncoli is just an artist who I really look forward to seeing. He's great. He's wonderful in these Star Wars books without sort of the robotic thing that Salvatore La Rocca is doing on his.
Right.
I dig it. It's been a really fun series and different in the way.
So what is the overall story other than going around and killing people right now? What's happening?
Trying to hunt down stuff that's left over from the Jedi. He's got the Inquisitors who I guess were in one of the cartoons. They're like fallen Jedi who then now work at hunting down any remaining Jedi. But the whole time, like, Palpatine is fucking with him. So, like, in this issue, like, a bunch of people try to kill him, and he's like, what the hell's going on here? And he makes the assassin hack backwards to find out who paid him, and it was, like, it's the capital in Coruscant. And she's like, that was really easy to find, and they just show a shot of Palpatine. So Palpatine's just constantly fucking with him.
Well, as we know, Palpatine will do that.
Yeah.
To people. Much like our patron power friend.
Yeah. Oh, God, I gotta
think. Lewis Williams, who has the Palpatine on his shoulder all the time. Okay. So, and that's actually a really good segue. I didn't intend to the patron powers. As we said in the top of the show, this is normally where we talk about the patron pick, but the patron pick was Invincible, so we skip that. But if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, any patron at any level can vote for the patron pick every week and put a book into the rundown. And also, if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower as we bestowed upon you on the show. As we said, Lewis Williams in the past was given. He keeps coming back to this. He's getting his money's worth. So let's give out some superpowers this week.
Will A, coincidentally, has a tiny lightsaber about 3 inches that can come out of the tip of his nose. The tip of his nose.
Just the blade or the handle?
No, just the blade. So he has a laser-based cutting implement that comes 3 inches out of the end of his nose.
Well, you know, that's actually pretty deadly if you walked up
to somebody. Oh, sure. Yeah. Like if he was about to get mugged, he'd be like, whoosh.
Well, even then, he could just put his head next to somebody's head and then it would come out and kill them. So you actually gave someone a very tactical weapon.
I think so. I think there's use to it, although it will take a little bit of strategy to figure out the best way to use it. But, you know, it's there.
Luke Pacheca. Paseca? Pacheca.
Mm.
So you know how, like, you'll be like, oh, I got a weird feeling in my back or arm or something.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what it is in your stomach. Am I sick? Am I just old?
Mm-hmm.
Luke knows what every feeling in his body means exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So, for instance, if you had like a stomach pain and you didn't know if it was a flu or if it was appendicitis,
mm-hmm.
Luke would know immediately, oh, that's my appendix. I got to go to the hospital. He's completely in tune with his body.
I bet that doesn't save him any money, though, because they're not going to listen to him. Like when he goes in, he's like, no, you don't have to do all that. It's appendicitis. Just go ahead.
I don't know. It depends on how persuasive he is.
Hmm. Does he have to understand the medical features and explanations in order to explain it?
Well, obviously, I think he's studied quite a bit
right.
to facilitate his visits to the doctor. But he just knows, yep, that's the spleen. No, it's all right. Just flaring up today.
Wow. He can say without a doubt, not cancer.
Exactly. He doesn't need WebMD to tell him he's got cancer.
That sounds delightful. All right. Next up is Randall Buchanan.
He's Civil War general.
I was thinking of a different thing. He can tell you what year every single president was born.
So he just studied?
No, he knows it.
He's never studied.
You would say to him, Theodore Roosevelt, and you'd be like, 1860. He would just know.
And he doesn't know why he knows. It's a curse? He
doesn't know why, yeah. Just U.S. presidents, though. So,
does he know their terms or just their dates of birth?
Just dates of birth. He just knows instantly. And I think if you check, I think I got Theodore Roosevelt right. Abraham Lincoln, 1809. I think I got that right. I'm not sure, though. But the thing is, if Randall Buchanan was here, he would know.
Yeah, he'd be like, Josh, you're wrong.
No, and he would roll his eyes at me because he doesn't understand why everybody doesn't just inherently know that.
James V gets all the TV channels.
In what way?
All of them. Any TV he's near gets all of the channels.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sort of a dying art, though, in a post-channel world.
No, there's still a lot of channels out there, and he gets them.
I like how it just is what it is. There's a lot of channels, and he gets them. Is that good or not? He gets them, Josh.
You have to ask James. I don't know. He gets them all, though.
Do I get that channel? Oh, don't worry about it. James is coming over. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Does he function as an antenna?
He's a cosmic TV antenna.
Wow.
Yeah. And it works. It works internationally. So if he's in London, for instance, he gets all the British channels.
Can he get all the British channels in the U.S. though?
No, it's in territory.
Based on the offering by the local cable company,
that's a mystery he may never solve. But you know, it's kind of like who is the one leaping Sam Beckett around? No one really knows. Who is the one giving James all of his channels? We may never know the answer to that. Like, if he goes to Canada, he's got all of them. CBC.
Okay, but say that you're in the Northeast, right? Your options are Comcast or DirecTV, but they both have different packages.
Mm-hmm. He gets them all.
He's going to 11.
Yes.
You just Nigel Tufnell.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. At any level, you get to vote in the book. At a $5 level, you get your own superpower. And you can just contribute there. Our next stretch goal is a non-comics media podcast, a monthly non-comics media podcast. So if you want to help us out get to that, go to patreon.com/iFanboy. You can also go to ifanboy.threadless.com for our t-shirts. Our 6 shirts, the iFanboy logo, the Herm, the Pick of the Week podcast, the ratings, the Fun is Electro, and the GDAT shirt. And we're working on the next one right now. So you can check that out. You also don't have to get those on shirts. You can get them on any item that puts items on, like a mug if you want.
Roosevelt was born in 1858, by the way. I was off by 2 years.
See, that's Randall would have shook his head at you.
I know. He's kind of
smug about it, I'll be honest. Yeah. I mean, whenever you hang out with him, he's like, you don't know Madison's birthday? I don't, Randall. I don't know Madison's birthday.
Didn't he die on July 4th?
I thought that was
Jefferson and Adams. I think Madison. Let's see. I did.
Is someone killing the presidents on July 4th?
No. I think he was. Let's see. I was right about Lincoln, though. 1809.
You looked it up while I keep talking. Ifanboy.com/Amazon is our new page on the website. You can go there. You can find all of the Booksplode books we've talked about. You can find links to buy those, and you can also find a general link there. Ifanboy.com/support is where you can go if you just want to throw some money via PayPal to keep the show going. As we mentioned, we are in the course of upgrading a bunch of back-end stuff that you will never see, hopefully never experience, other than making your experience better. We have switched over our podcast provider, which means we have to upgrade all of the players on the website, which requires lots of development money. So thank you, everyone who's helped us out through Patreon and through PayPal and through Amazon and through Threadless, because all of that goes to help make that happen. So thanks to everyone who supports the show.
All right. Madison was, March 16th, 1751 to June 28th, 1836.
It's like I don't even know who you are anymore.
I don't know a lot about Madison, if I'm going to be honest with you.
All right. The unsung founder.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I got to go get some books. Hang on.
Brian C. from Cleveland-ish, Ohio writes in and says, there's certainly a trend running through much of modern comics, superhero or otherwise, that reflects the aging population of both creators and consumers. Batman is getting married, Superman is a dad, and even the Vision tried to settle down and start a family. It makes me wonder how you all see yourselves fitting into that landscape. Rather than choosing which hero or villain you're most like, I'm wondering which parental figure from comics you would say the other is most like. Is Connor the stand-in father Alfred is to Bruce? Has Josh had the good guys talk with his sons the way Jesse's father did in Preacher? I don't know.
I'm trying to figure out how to answer this. Connor's not a father, so...
No, but I have done the stand-in father thing.
Okay.
I have done that for my sister.
Okay, fair enough. That's true. You're to me very much a big brother.
I would not call myself a father, but I have done this sort of stand-in figure.
Yeah, no, to me you are like an excellent older brother, possibly an uncle.
I'll be awesome uncle, yeah.
So I mean, that puts you in Dick Grayson territory. Not to shine your shoes too much. Yeah. I think there's a bit of that.
Josh is the...
Go on.
I took a sip of water there to buy some time.
I don't know this answer. So
I don't know either. So the Al Bundy type.
I will leave the show.
He's not a comics character. I don't know. Your kids are too young. You haven't had the good guys talk with them.
I have too.
You have?
I absolutely have. I've been having that talk with them from day one.
Day one? You're wasting your time.
I know, but I'm just hoping that some of it sticks. You'd be shocked what it is they remember from things that happened before.
Okay, that's good.
So I just thought I would start it as a theme that is ever present about being good guys.
Excellent.
Because I think that that's very important right now.
Sure.
But I am in no way Jesse Custer's father. In any way. Do you remember what a tough badass he was?
Yeah, no, that's not
you. What was his name?
Badass.
Yeah, might as well. Vietnam vet. He was prankstery. He was
Jack from This Is Us.
Yeah, I'll trust you on that. I have something about a crock pot. That's all I know. It's funny. I was on my way somewhere and like that had happened the day before. And I said to my wife who watches it, I was like, something happened to the crockpot, and then she went into a 25-minute explanation. And I was like, I have to leave. And she's like, no, but wait. And I was like, please stop. Please. She just kept going.
We'll say you have aspects of Jesse's father since you were having the good guys talk with your sons all the time.
You know what I think about a lot in terms of characters who I've related to? I think the way that Jeff Lemire wrote Animal Man.
Mm-hmm.
In his take on the series, I related a lot to that. I thought that was really good. He's just sort of trying to do everything, and there's a lot of things that have to be done. I don't relate so much to Jack Knight in Starman, but mm-hmm. I think about it a lot because he's a guy who's sort of was very self-involved with all this stuff in his world, and it was a very different thing. And then having a kid changes everything completely the other way around.
There you go. You're most like Jack Knight.
Yeah, sort of. But he's on his own.
Jack Knight mixed with Jesse's father from Preacher.
Yeah, again, not so much him.
Well,
other than his ethos about good guys.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I'll go with that.
That's okay. You don't have to exactly be in, you know, the badass Vietnam vet, but you can also be the guy who wants his son to be good.
Sure.
John Custer.
John Custer, yeah. John R. Custer, I feel like. I feel like there's an R.
You can put an R in anyone's name and it sounds better.
It does. R. Kilpatrick. That's not right.
No, that doesn't work.
Adam from Indiana says, you guys have pointed out how Marvel Studios films sometimes affect the comics in terms of things like character likeness, costumes, or tone. Even so, the comics and films clearly exist in separate continuities and neither is treated as canon that the other has to follow. The opposite is true for Marvel's Star Wars comics. Do you think it would be better if Star Wars comics could tell their own stories outside of the confines of the film canon? What if the entire comic line was considered part of Star Wars Legends? For each of you, would it – I got annoyed when he wrote Star Wars Legends. It's not his fault, just at the concept of it. For each of you, would it make reading Star Wars comics less enjoyable? I guess this is just for me. Or you might enjoy it more if the comics and films were officially separate. It's a good question. Do you defer?
I would read them. I read and really enjoyed Brian Wood's Star Wars series from Dark Horse.
So you
– Yeah, if they weren't officially in canon – I would probably read them, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So the fact that they are is a turnoff to you because
yes.
Why?
As we discussed on the Last Jedi podcast, I like to keep Star Wars small.
Okay. Now, previously, before this Star Wars Legends nonsense, there was a large extended universe, which you were somewhat familiar with, which is the same thing. It's just basically they replaced all that so that the movies could do whatever, because that stuff was canon, but then they just washed it off. Which, again, totally fine. Did you have a problem with that then?
I don't think so. Star Wars is so sprawling at this point. It's almost like you gotta just pick and choose mm-hmm. and what you're okay with. I don't really spend a lot of time worrying about Star Wars canon, if I'm being honest. I just decide to enjoy what I'm going to enjoy and not worry about the rest of it. I know it's angsty for people who are really, really into the comics. You know, all those EU things.
I'm in between where you are, and because I like that it's all canon. I like that because it's Marvel and DC, like they're doing something that's sort of coordinated and they have to think about it. And I liked that the books, you know, I liked were all canon for a while. I liked that the Thrawn story was a real thing until they had to get rid of it so they could tell their own movies.
Yeah, no, I liked it at the time, but then it got too sprawling, you know?
Yes. But the thing is, it's the same time, then you pick and choose. You say, I don't need to know all this.
Sure, for sure.
And also, I don't care if they contradict themselves because it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the way that you and I certainly have developed as comic readers. Like, we understand that realistically, I mean, there's some things that they have to get right, but there are other things like, who gives a shit?
For sure. And I think for what I decided as all these things were happening with Star Wars, like, you know, I don't need to read those things. The level of enjoyment is not there that's going to counteract the level of annoyance. And so I don't, you know, I just don't do it. I can do it in comics because I've been doing it for so long, and comics are a different beast than Star Wars, and it's fine. I read all those books in the 90s. I read from Thrawn on through when Chewie died, and I read everything in between, and all the Tales of the Bounty Hunters and Rogue Squadron and Tales from the Cantina. I loved all that stuff. But I think I might have gotten overloaded on it. So I just chose to go the other way now.
Oh, and I had the same moment. I remember I was in the middle of either the second or third Rogue Squadron novel, and I went, nope. And I never read another book.
Yeah.
I went, we've gone too far. But I loved that those Tales books were officially part of the story in
sure.
my head.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it can go either way. I would prefer this rather than hither, thither, nothing matters.
Nothing makes sense, nothing matters?
Yep, I don't want more of that. Because then you don't know what is supposed to matter. At least this we do, if you care to know.
So we're split. You're saying if they were outside of continuity, you would enjoy them less, and I said I would probably enjoy them more.
Uh-huh.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Contact at ifanboy.com. That's how you get on the show. Adam and Brian, thank you for writing in.
Yes. Let us go to the plugs about our other podcast, shall we? I did a conversation with Scotty Young, which was our December Talksplode, which came out at the very end of January.
Yes.
I recognize that, and I'm not going to apologize, but I recognize it. We've got another one coming out for you next week. I'm going to go ahead and tell you because he told you this in an announcement. I've talked to Rob Guillory, artist on Chew, and a new upcoming project that he will have talked about by the time our show is released. So if you like what he says about that and you want to come back for more of it, Rob and I talked for about an hour about the book and his career and about Chew. And I really like Rob. So I look forward to sharing that with people.
I think you should listen even if you don't like what the announcement is, because maybe you'll find it interesting.
Yeah. We don't talk about the book the whole time because I can't tell you anything about it. So, you know, you could just, because you like Rob Giller, you like Chew.
Right behind this show on the feed, you can find our Black Panther show, in which the Animated Brain Trust assembled to talk about a live-action film. Well, although it's a superhero movie, so much of it is not live-action. And also, the Animated Brain Trust talked about Batman Gotham by Gaslight. You can find that on the feed a couple shows back. So, special shows. We got Talksplodes, we got movie reviews, we got cartoon reviews coming at you. And then there'll be a Booksplode. February? Is this the month for a Booksplode?
No, I did a Talksplode. We have a Booksplode next month, March.
Oh, that's right, March. Phew! All right.
Yeah, no, you're good.
You're throwing the schedule off, threw me off.
I'm not apologizing. I've made that clear.
I looked at the calendar and got real worried that we had 2 weeks to do a Booksplode.
We did Iceman in January. That's We're right. going to do that's another right. book in March. We'll let you guys know what it is when we know. That's Obviously, right. we don't even know when it is, so don't hold your breath.
So, you can find all the shows at ifanboy.com.
So very obviously, head over to ifanboy.com to find all that stuff. You want to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can like us on facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. You could also be a patron because we tell you about that stuff over there too at patreon.com/ifanboy. I'm chewing my words up here. I'm sorry. Find out. Follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram or at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram. Those are the social media links that I think we've explained.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes, please, or leave a star rating. It's simple. Just one click and you're done, and it helps people find podcasts, and we think everyone has done that. Even better than that, tell people about it. Tell your friends who read comics. Tell your mom. Tell the cop when he pulls you over for speeding. I was speeding, but also, have you heard the Pick of the Week podcast?
License and registration, sir.
I don't.
License and registration,
but have you heard
sir?
About it? I mean,
I'm going to need to step out of the car.
But hold on. They talk about the
click.
So help, and then when you're in the prison, you can spread the word around there too. We'll take any listeners. So help spread the iFanboy love all around, even in local lockup. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
See you next week.
Goodbye. Listeners like you.
Whoa! What the fuck was that?
The arm of my chair that is adjustable apparently does not bear weight if you move it into an upper position. Sounded worse than it was.
And then Josh fell over, hit his head, and I didn't know what to do.
Josh, can you hear me?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.